Hey guys, welcome. Radio.
I thought that I would get it right this time, but I keep thinking that it's like going dropping right in, that it has a tag. But anyways, guys, what's up, everybody? This is your battle to win. My name is Jared, and this show is run by me and my mom, Joni Lecky, or my mom. And yeah, it is right. This is run by me. It's not run by me. We still have talks about grammar and stuff, but this episode is about assembling your allies, defining your allies, why we need them, finding the common ground, and much, much more in this particular episode, because we all know that it is a battle to win. If we want to use a war metaphor, you're never going to win a war by yourself. You need allies, you need a team, you need people that will fight alongside you instead of against you. And how do you get people on your team? Not in the physical sense, because there's a lot of content on the internet about, like, you know, how to win friends, influence people, how to gain credibility in your circle. But a lot of those things are in the physical and mental and emotional sense. But we need to tie that into the spiritual, because there's a lot deeper of things that take place when it comes to building your allies in the spiritual realm. Is that a good intro?
Yeah. So, I guess I was more pulled back and thinking, you know, because we kind of went over how we are going to present this and how we are going to kind of free flow, how we see allies, and you know, how to maintain those relationships, mm-hmm. that in a manner that creates the win. And so, the idea that we have to kind of see what allies really means. And let's kind of like start there and help people understand that they're, you know, I think we don't necessarily take a look at how things look spiritually, like you said, but the physical and the physical aspect of friendships and the mental and the emotional, those are all part of it. They're definitely, but we just have to understand how to integrate it, how these allies help us win battles and what the battle is, because, you know, the idea that we have battles to win is something kind of nebulous, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we can really tell that we have problems and we have conflicts and there's things that we have to overcome. But to really get to the understanding that it is spiritual, that the battle, that the package of a battle, packaging of the concept of a battle is spiritual,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not something that, you know, you have the risk game out there, you got, you know, whatever kind of...
In numbers versus chance, and, like, it's all based upon chance. But in the spiritual realm, like, everything is fully... You have the ability to have full control of at least on what happens on your turf or on your area of the battle.
Right.
Like, well, I feel like it's completely controllable. It's all about your discipline and your understanding of declaring what's yours.
Well,
what territory, like knowing where you are supposed to, where your calling is in the battle. I mean, like you can get to the place where you have full control of that.
Well, I think part of the, like, I'm listening to you too, and then it's like nebulous to me what you're saying, and so the spiritual nature of it needs to be discussed, and that's part of, like, finding allies that can help define what the spiritual battle is, because it's more comprehensive than we understand. It really takes into account that there's a lot of different types of people and there's a lot of different things going on, but there's some basic core tools, like we did with the tools that help you win, the declared win. Those things are very set. They're very stable. They're concepts like courage or persistence or insightfulness so that you can see it, or wisdom, you know, those things that we talk about. But when we go in our day in and day out, the way that public education has kind of defined what things are, it's the purpose to me of us approaching the battle and your battle to win this, you know, radio time,
mm-hmm.
is helping people to restructure their approach to the things that they're doing, the problems that they have, or even the good things that happen, to be able to see things with spiritual eyes, because that's so important. Because we know there is a spiritual nature.
Mm-hmm.
It's just we don't have enough attention that needs to be more maturing in us. So that requires teamwork.
And how? And that's the thing too. Is like, how are you going to cover this? I guess some people would say unknown ground, because a lot of the time we perceive things very physically. We don't necessarily perceive things spiritually. So that could be like unknown territory to you. So how are you going to scout your unknown territory? And it's very difficult to do when you're a lone ranger in the middle of nowhere, trying to not only like maneuver through the stuff, but by yourself, you could get lost very easily and end up, you know, in a very bad position by going by yourself. If we want to go into a biblical sense too, you need people alongside you to keep you accountable to not getting lost.
Right, and not getting harmed. We need someone to have our backside, you know, our side, our front side. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of things people understand. They just don't define it as being spiritual. And they don't necessarily define their friendships or the people that they're around as allies in a battle. Or that the battles that they go through or the conflicts or all the drama or problems, that they are spiritual behind it. Or maybe, you know, people do. Maybe some of the people listening right now, they do. But we're wanting it to become something very defined, something very understandable. Again, we need, you know, each other to keep seeing different aspects of what that battle is and how we see it differently. But that's the idea. So what are allies? So what would you say allies are?
An ally is somebody that that has declared that they will fight or join. It's not always used in a fighting sense. Sometimes it's an expedition of two parties that choose to come together and, you know, like achieve a common goal. Or two people that share similar views and opinions, and they decide to, I mean, but the interesting about allies is you don't necessarily have to agree with them to choose to side with them, if that makes sense. Like I've been in situations where I've had to ally for a friend, even though I disagreed with them, it was more important that I found out a way that in my disagreement I could still support who they are as a person versus the inconsistent idea. But I think what an ally truly is somebody that's on your side even if you disagree. And will use the disagreement to hold you accountable to make sure that you're doing the best decision that you can. Does that make sense? Like there's people, I'm sure there's been people in your life where you're like, I may completely disagree with Charles on something, but he's my ally. Charles is one of my friends and we work together. We work out of my house and stuff like that. And we meet up like twice a week to work together. And there will be times where we will completely disagree about something and we'll fight for hours about it. There was actually a project we worked on when we were in California. You remember that? We were yelling at each other for 3 hours.
Didn't tell me that.
No, we were the entire session, the entire time we were together, we were yelling. Like we still have the documents and stuff, and we laugh about it because it's just like, wow, like we fought over this. Like this is so dumb. Like we didn't need to fight over it. But
did it make you closer?
Yeah, it ends up bringing us closer, even though. We probably still, if we load up those documents, like, we'd still disagree a lot about it. But, like, we would still completely have different opinions as to what to do with it. But the fact that we went through it and we still decided to, like, continue to push through and move on past it, like, it made us a lot closer, even though we just wanted to cut each other's heads off at the moment.
Also, the idea of the spiritual nature of what that conflict is, you know, and then what you push through. Can you kind of describe that? Can you describe
that? I would say it'd be somebody that would be like iron to you because, you know, there would be moments of friction. You both have the understanding that the friction is to make you better, not to tear each other apart. And even to be a good ally, you have to know how to sharpen somebody instead of tear them down because there's way, because sometimes your best friend or your greatest ally is not going to tell you that you're doing something, or, well, let's say it. There's a moth, and it's not okay. It's disrupting my concentration. The moth is not my ally. I think I got him. Anyways, spiritual ally. They're not always going to tell you what you want to hear, but they're going to tell you the truth because they know it's going to make you a better person.
Or the truth as they see it, right? Because, for the instance that you're going through a child, it's not necessarily maybe either one of you are right or wrong, or maybe one is right or wrong, but neither one of you can discern yet, right? Both of you think you're right. So from a spiritual standpoint, I think that those attributes of humility, you know, the character things that create what really amounts to an ally. There has to be something being willing to I guess, hear or trust or, you know, align with at some level that occurs, right, for someone to be an ally. But like you said, maybe you don't agree on everything, or maybe there's some ways that you don't even trust an ally. What do you do about things like that? I mean, we're defining the ally now. So, you know, when you're wanting to win a battle, and you're wanting to, you realize that you have to assemble allies in order to win this. What does that mean? Maybe bringing them a little closer to what in some other battle. How do you, what kinds of people, or what kind of what are you looking for in order to win something? Like Charles is a really good example because you guys are so close.
Mm-hmm.
So you picked each other because you guys have the same objective.
We still do have our goal has changed. Our goal of where we want to be successful has not changed. Maybe the method or what success looks like has changed. The method of how the plan, I guess you would say, the plan and the what we consider being becoming successful means that has changed. But the journey, I guess, we've always agreed on.
And it's
taken time to get to a common goal, and I wouldn't say that our common goal has been perfected yet, but we continue to, as we spend more time together, we understand where each other's goals are, and then we work together to achieve them. And I think the interesting is as we communicate, what we've come as a team is literally we both will put our goals down that we see as individuals, and then we help the other person achieve them under the common name of our group.
And I think what I'm hearing you say still is very tangible, right? The things that you're defining are very tangible. However, maybe, and I know you guys see it this way, but you don't necessarily, you're not discussing it as part of the goal or even the journey, but there's, In the win and the need for the ally, there is something deeper than just the goal. It's the ability to help lift the other person up and be there for the long haul. And there's some specific points we'll get into about that. But the idea that when you're defining your allies, defining what an ally is, that ally is going to stick with you, right?
Mm-hmm.
The ally is going to make a choice, a decision. Both of you have made this concrete decision, which has been amazing to watch, that no matter how different you are, the objective for your life vision, for who you are in your essence, those portions of the battle, you are there for each other. Not just the objective of your production, you know, what you're trying to produce.
Mm-hmm.
It's spiritual, right?
Yeah,
it's a spiritual commitment to character and accomplishment in a bigger, deeper, richer sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the ally has to have something more for you than just it's beyond just how they get benefits from you.
I mean, that's what it comes down to. And the thing is, we probably, as we work together, have made more sacrifices than even benefits. As at this point, both in the physical sense and probably even the spiritual sense, like especially when it comes to putting your pride aside, to like it really sometimes it'll boil down to, and this to me is a spiritual question because pride is a spiritual behavior,
mm-hmm.
Or
something defined. We would define that in the spiritual realm.
Yeah.
I mean, we would. Maybe other people overlook that, or they do see
it.
Yeah,
more of an emotion, maybe, but.
Or just simply a behavior.
Yeah, but what we've gotten to the point of is like, what's more important, our pride, or building a relationship, and the more that we're together, and the more I'm with, I mean, it's not just Charles, because I'm, you know, I work with other people too, but like, as time passes, you learn that it's more important to put your pride aside and continue to build with the person than to be right and, you know, wrong the other person. I think that's a good way to say it.
Right.
You know, because it's not right to wrong another person, because then you basically justified, what's the word, what's the phrase? You falsely justified your mindset, or you declare that you were right at the expense of at the expense of your ally, and you could potentially be making an enemy, which is not what we're trying to do.
But this is very deep, I find it deep, what you're saying in terms of defining your ally. You know, this, your relationship with Charles is a really good example of, it's an inspiring example of the commitment that you have, because you guys are so different. And yet you are allies for the good of each other and the common goal.
Yeah.
But the good of each other and what's going on is so important. So that's, in terms of defining an ally, then let's go a little bit broader, or some other types of people that... I mean, I always just see it as someone who has your back, someone who's thinking about you enough, but they care enough about you that if you, you know, and sometimes it's unexpected. Like one of my friends who has cancer, she had, in the political realm, you know, some very contentious people in the same organization, and yet when she had the cancer, then all of a sudden, they donated a lot of money, and they sent very nice words and were very supportive. So the idea that, you know, that people can be allies even if they are maybe in opposition to you,
yeah,
that we don't know.
Well, this is, and I thought of this too, because I don't know how many people are you familiar with Dragon Ball Z. I know my mom's not at all sure what that is. But basically, Dragon Ball Z is like, it's a Japanese cartoon series about a man by the name of Goku who's like, he has like, so his character is a man that if you put any limitation on him, he will break it. Like, that's just naturally his character. That's what he represents. That's what he stands for. And he's always trying to find out the good in other people. And even his opponents,
uh-huh,
he refuses to fight them unless they are at their best, because he doesn't want to beat somebody unfairly. Like, that's the basis of his character. And when the series starts out, there's an alien that's like his opposition, and his name is Piccolo. And the way the series starts out is Piccolo actually is trying to take over the world by conquering the Dragon Balls, and there's seven of them. And once you find all seven of them, you put them together in one spot, and you get to make any wish that you want, and that's the power of the Dragon Balls. And then after the wish is made, the seven balls are dispersed around the world again, and the process repeats itself. So, but what ended up happening is, right when they had their first major contention in the series, or somewhere along the beginning of the series, Earth gets invaded by a third group of aliens, and they end up being forced to side alongside each other, because they know that they're the two most powerful beings on Earth and the Earth's only chance to actually survive, and neither one of them would be able to, you know, exist by themselves. Like, they couldn't fight them by themselves. So you have two enemies being forced to fight alongside each other, which creates a very interesting dynamic, because they know that they can't. Or I feel like it makes it more tricky for Piccolo than it does for Goku, because Goku doesn't care as long as they're on, like, as long as Earth is okay. Like, that's kind of the weird thing about his character, is like, he just doesn't care as long as you're not hurting anybody, type of thing, or hurting the right people. And so they end up for almost the entire first season, which is like hundreds of episodes and super long, and this is like, I haven't gone super in depth, so a lot of this is what people have told me who have watched the entire series. But basically, what ends up happening is Piccolo decides to be friends with Goku because, like, you know, why would you want to continue to fight the person that's going to stop you from taking over the world when you can just be friends and everything is fine and, like, there's no ego necessary. And then from what I've heard as well, when the second season comes out, they end up continue to fight alongside each other and protect the world, and, you know, that's the premises of the story. But it was kind of interesting how, like, Piccolo's original intention was to help Goku get rid of everything, like all the bad guys, all the aliens, so that way he could have nothing in his way between him and Goku, so now he could resume taking over the world again. And Goku's thing was like, you know, I can't fight the two of you right now. If we're going to fight, at least do it fairly and later, you know, because like it's not right that, like, it's just a very interesting dynamic. But I don't know. I always thought that story was the most there's so many smaller parts of the story to, like, I guess the best part about a story is inside the story that supports the story and makes the story that much more interesting and vast and better and complex. So that was the element that I always loved about Dragon Ball Z and it was funny too, in the same, like, as what originally happens is Goku's brother is part of these aliens that come to attack Earth. And then after Goku and Piccolo have wiped out everybody except for him and his brother, there's another set of invaders that come to take care of Earth. And they're all three of them are forced to be alongside of each other. So it gets even more, like, I jumped around. But you get the idea, though. The whole story is just based upon the most unexpected things happening, and somehow it still comes together, works, and makes an incredible story. And at the end of it, all three of them are, you know, friends, and they're cool with each other and stuff. It's very interesting.
So they ended up making it so that there's something really positive.
Mm-hmm.
That turned out that they really became allies.
Yeah.
So even though that there was some malintent in there.
Oh, the whole thing, like, they really paint Goku as this, like, saint, if you would, and then everybody, like, and his friends are, like, either goofballs or they're stupid, or, like, which is the irony of that is Goku is the biggest goofball of them all. Like, he's the most, like, you would consider him to be, like, socially clueless. You would see him to be, like, not perceptive about certain things at all. But he's, like, has the kindest heart, the most perceptive as to what other people are trying to do. He's not even inappropriate. He doesn't even understand inappropriateness at all. And then there's probably three characters that are his close friends, and they're, like, subliminally inappropriate, and he's just like, huh? Like, he doesn't get it. Like, he's just clueless to that. But it's really interesting.
Well, so the idea of defining the allies is, it's really important that, well, I think it's a little different than the story that you just told, but we kind of want to find people that we trust. But the interesting thing is that in that, we also have to look at how we can help someone who is maybe not an ally, maybe is an enemy, but that there may be an opportunity later to ally. I mean, I think we need to stay open-minded. Maybe that's even part of the story. The idea to stay open-minded towards people, don't be firm you know, think that they could never help us or never be an ally, but we have to be cautious.
Mm-hmm.
So in defining the allies that we need to win our battle, we really want to find people with some common ground, you know, there needs to obviously be some very common ground. So obviously that's what happens, but then we can be fooled then too, right?
Yeah.
And that how, you know, sometimes people get into problems because of, you know, because you do find you have so much common ground, and then you find out, you know, maybe something isn't quite aligned.
Yeah.
So why do we need allies to win our battle? We do our declared wins, or we have these tools, and there's certain things that we can win, but certain things we find ourselves reoccurring, or we even having trouble doing, you know, staying focused on the spiritual nature of the battle, or the fact that really we need to have faith in the Creator to help us to get us, you know, to be prayerful, to get at certain angles of what we really need to change in our being. A lot of it we can't just do on our own. Really, we need intervention. So we need, so Scripture gives us intervention from the Lord, but also in wise counsel and in lifting each other up. And there's a whole purpose of the teamwork.
Yeah.
So our battle is not just for ourselves to win by ourselves.
Yeah. I think the first thing in terms of allies is you have people helping you cover bases that you couldn't cover by yourself. You can cover more ground with allies. You can have more resources with allies. You can have more, there's more thought into what's going on with allies. There's more, and it's just more fun. Like, things are pretty boring when you're doing it by yourself, but when there's another person, like, it creates an entire, like, just even one, having one other person involved creates an entirely new dynamic. And even the fact of having an ally can be a challenge because it's, like, it's a relationship that you have to maintain, and even that can be a struggle sometimes. But, you know, it's always beneficial because it helps you be more, I mean, if you want to go to a strictly personal sense, it helps you become more well-rounded of a person because they have things going on in their life that they do better than yours. And it kind of be like, oh, I should probably think about that. Or I should probably pay attention to that area of my life. Or they'll be doing something that's excessive and or unnecessary or harmful to themselves, and it'll remind you to check your patterns and be like, okay, am I doing something like this in my life that's not helping me? You know, it provides a good mirror. And the same thing, too, is sometimes when we even go to approach another person and talk to them about what's going on, you start to see things differently because you have to explain it differently in a way that they will understand it. Because it may make sense to us one way, but to another person, we may tell them exactly what we tell ourselves, and they won't have a clue what you just said.
So we need these allies to help us where we have blind spots. Just up in prayer, I noticed for me, like when I am in a battle and I text friends. So I have a certain number of friends that I text, certain different ones for different things, maybe it's what's relatable to them. You know, so they're my allies in different arenas. Maybe some things when it comes to you guys, you know, friends that have kids, same ages. So they become my allies to battle for a certain situation. And I see huge changes within minutes to maybe a few hours in you guys. So, it's remarkable. Like, every single battle that I brought before friends where I felt like, oh, my goodness, this is going to be impossible.
It's always way better when you tell somebody about it because you're not wrestling it from one side. You now have another person that's either going to help you, that's going to get into the fight with you, or let's say it's like wrestling where it's one-on-one, where it's like a one-on-one type of situation and they're not allowed to step into the ring to fight with you. They can at least tell you, like, hey, like, I see from this perspective that you could do this, and it would change that situation. Like, he can't step in and like, wrestle with you. Or, like, wrestling is a good example. Wrestling, the rules are strictly it's you and the other opponent, and no one else is allowed in the ring except the referee who is not supposed to touch anybody. So he's basically, like, he doesn't exist. I don't think. Anyway, but you got your coach on the side telling you what he sees that you can't. And you got to learn to when to listen to him, because even that is a – Because that could be a game changer. Because yes, he's been doing it longer than you, but then again, he's not in the situation with,
right.
You know, it's a lot different because you know your body sometimes better than, you know, sometimes the coach will know your body better than you because he's been around for that much longer, or he built that relationship with you. But generally, you know your body, you know what you're capable of, you know your, within your mind, with you know what you're capable of doing, and the coach. It's interesting because sometimes the coach will see something will know that you're capable of doing something that you don't even know you're capable of, or he doesn't, and it's very interesting to try to see
the spiritual aspect or the word that I come to mind is discernment, right?
Yeah.
So we don't necessarily use that word a lot in our culture, discernment, but then that's what I'm hearing in your whole thing. I'm defining meaning. These allies is that, you know, there are things that you may overlook, but the spiritual nature of winning with an ally is being able to discern when they know more than you and discern if you really do know more than they,
mm-hmm.
because they, you may not. You actually may make a choice that you know something and tune out the ally and then have a loss, or vice versa. You may decide to listen to the ally and have a loss.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but then other times the objective is those skills in the spiritual realm are necessary to develop too. So even when we make losses,
mm-hmm.
the benefit of an ally is the ability then to hone those skills, the
mm-hmm.
spiritual skills.
Continue to sharpen each other.
Well, no, not just each other, the idea of discerning.
Mm-hmm.
From both standpoints.
Yeah.
The ally is willing to work with you to figure out who's right and who's wrong so you guys can both continue to hone to make sure you become more correct in whatever the response is.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you the battle that you have to win could be anything, right? It could be a health battle. It could be a spouse battle. It could be, you know, with kids or at work or whatever, right? There could be a battle there. The allies that we need, we need them because we need to work on skills, not just in responding, but then that concept of discerning who's right. You know, am I right or am I wrong? Is my ally right or is that ally wrong? And that ally, hopefully, will be close enough that you keep working those discussion points, the skills, to make sure that you're really on point. You know, that who's on point? How do we, you know, because I look back, I was thinking about it this week, just, you know, yeah, I thought I was being wise asking for one person's counsel on whether we should have, you know, how we should, whether your dad and I should have moved us to Oregon versus staying in San Diego,
mm-hmm.
and just realizing, oh my goodness, that I thought I was being wise just by asking the counsel of one very experienced person, but wisdom now would have been to actually have a deeper conversation, more richer and fuller with people who know me well,
mm-hmm.
and several of them, so I could hear different people's responses.
And that's what I've learned too, is like it's more, sometimes like, I have this thing where, like, if I want people to know that I'm about to do something, I don't like telling people because I want it to be like, oh, he did that? Like, that's so awesome. Like, you know, like, that's so cool. Like, I would have never expected that. And it's just like, that's the type of person I want. Like, that's the way I want to do things. But I've learned that it's best to still talk to as many people as possible and get their opinion on something, both from people who are experienced and inexperienced, because sometimes people have never been in a situation before because they strictly see it from the outside looking in, they will perceive something different. Because somebody who has experienced something might even still point you the wrong way because they only see a particular fork in the road that's after the problem already started.
Right.
And like, okay, so this happens, so this is when you get out of it. But the people that have never gone in might be able to be like, yo, so you can avoid this altogether. And that's how I've avoided that altogether.
But part of what I'm hearing or wanting us to even highlight is these discussions, what we're wanting to do here on this radio show is so important because we really have to focus on becoming allies and developing that ally relationship because it's long-term. It's not just for now. And if someone doesn't listen to someone's opinion, they shouldn't get offended. The idea is helping each other to make the best choices. And that's a lifelong thing, that we need to be there for each other, seeing how we make mistakes together, seeing how we make the right choices, how we, you know, what happens, because we're learning from each other then, but we're not arrogant or what's the word I'm trying, like looking down on.
Disgusting.
I can't think of it. But, you know, that the humility is there to both ask and then sometimes to make our own choice. The humility needs to be there if we're giving an opinion, but let the other person make the poor choice or let's see what is the result and continue to learn. And then we all learn so much more as allies. And then we can win more battles.
Exactly.
One of the things you introed is, with finding those with common ground. So there's, you know, obviously our allies, we're going to have to have some common ground. So But the, you know, how much common ground do we really need, and how specific does that common ground need to be for that our particular battle? But like you said, is it good for there to be a difference?
Mm-hmm.
Because then we're going to get a different perspective.
I would say, I mean, I think this topic is the simplest to go over, because, like, you can get a lot of good advice from people where you don't have a lot of common ground with, and from those that you do. So it makes sense that you would want some sort of common ground, because if you can't relate to somebody, it doesn't work, period. Like, if I met somebody who, like, is complete, so polar opposite from me, I don't even understand who they even are, then there's probably no chance that we'll even have a conversation past, hey, how are you doing? Good, how are you?
I think because of how we're trained in our culture, that's absolutely true. But then as I guess I'm maturing or getting older or whatever, I start really seeing the value, even though I feel like the other person may not value what I'm saying or how I see things, I find a lot of value in there and how they see things differently.
So if I'm about to get engaged, I should pull a random guy off the street and be like, hey, so this, let me tell you about this person. Tell him everything about her, and then both good things and bad things, and say, I have this much money, I have this, my situation, blah, 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 blah. Should I marry this girl? And then they're like, I have no common ground with that person to get their advice. That sounds logical.
That sounds weird.
I feel like I would do that, though. Like, just for the sake of, like, having fun. Like, I think that would just be funny. Just to just randomly meet somebody out on the street and be like, hey, can I get some advice from you? And then just go into this really long, elaborate, detailed thing that actually is, like, super important, and be like, if you were the one person that, like, this entire decision was to be placed upon, what would you say?
See, I would say, I have no common thing with you.
And just walk away. You wouldn't even
No, I didn't mean it like that. I meant it like, see, and so this is how, right, people think so differently. So what I meant by what it is like, how funny that you think like that, because I have no idea.
I think I might actually get some good insight from that person, just because of the fact that I don't know anything from their background, that they don't know anything about me, so they're just going to straight up say whatever they think or not.
Right.
You know, it's going to be very interesting to see what their reaction would be. And
it would be good advice, but I mean, good to have insight for, to have somebody that doesn't know anything about the situation. But part of it is it's only your bias,
mm-hmm.
even if you're trying to do both sides, right?
Yeah.
And then, but it, you know, the thing is I guess what makes me feel funny when you're saying that is like, oh, you're going to inconvenience this person who doesn't care. But maybe you find someone who really genuinely was like, that's fun for them, you know?
So. And those people are hit or miss, because if they're not that type of person, they'll be like,
whatever.
Like, they won't even let you start. They'll be like, I'm sorry. I won't let, like, I hope you have a nice day, and
yep.
She's cool, but bye.
Well, let's go ahead and let's break for a commercial here and be right back.
All righty.
Hello everyone, my name is Suzanne Marr and I'm founder of Bye Bye Blue Sky, and we have a passion for the planet. Bye Bye Blue Sky is a dedicated global public environmental movement who seeks to be a voice for all living creatures and ecosystems, and to protect human health and safeguard the natural environment, air, water, and land which our sustenance depends. We use education, peaceful protest, and creative communication to expose one of the world's largest and most significant ecological threats and preeminent disasters, commonly known as climate engineering or chemtrails. Please visit our website, byebyebluesky.com, and learn the truth about the sinister aerosol spraying. There are many media articles, patents, government white papers, which are available on our site, which attest to these programs. We also have awareness items, bumper stickers, t-shirts, which can be purchased, and brochures and business cards, which can be downloaded and distributed. There are a number of ongoing Bye Bye Blue Sky GoFundMe billboard campaigns in North America. The link's available on our website. I encourage everyone to donate to these billboards. A few dollars can save the planet. Please also join Bye Bye Blue Sky on our Facebook page of the same name and meet dedicated and like minds. Thank you.
yes, you have a right to do things that are very controversial. If not, you're going to end up with government that's going to tell us what we can eat and drink and whatever.
Well, hello, this is Liberty Lisa, and you are listening to The Truth Train.
We're on a mission from God.
I think that if we actually follow the Constitution, you know, it would be a completely different world that we were living in.
Oh, yeah!
You know, I myself am fighting against, the unconstitutional state laws here on foreclosure here in Colorado. How in the world could the Attorney General, the purported defender of the people, support an unconstitutional law?
I'm kidding myself that I've got to be with these fools.
If you're going to amend the Constitution and show a track record of at least upholding what's there in the first place, let's not go and talk about changing something that you really don't know about and haven't implemented yourself.
You went full retard, man. Never go full retard.
The Truth Train with Liberty Lisa. Tuesday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on Truth Emerges Radio.
Fluoride and the pineal gland. Up until the 1990s, no research had ever been conducted to determine the impact of fluoride on the pineal gland, a small gland located between the two hemispheres of the brain that regulates the production of the hormone melatonin. Melatonin is a hormone that helps regulate the onset of puberty and helps protect the body from cell damage caused by free radicals. It is now known, thanks to the meticulous research of Dr. Jennifer Luke from the University of Surrey in England, that the pineal gland is the primary target of fluoride accumulation within the body. The soft tissue of the adult pineal gland contains more fluoride than any other soft tissue in the body, a level of fluoride capable of inhibiting enzymes, about 300 parts per million. The pineal gland also contains hard tissue, hydroxyapatite crystals, and this hard tissue accumulates up to 21,000 parts per million, which is more fluoride than any other hard tissue in the body, e.g. teeth and bone. After finding that the pineal gland is the major target for fluoride accumulation in humans, Dr. Luke conducted animal experiments to determine if the accumulated fluoride could impact the functioning of the gland, particularly the gland's regulation of melatonin. Luke summarized her human and animal findings as follows. In conclusion, the human pineal gland contains the highest concentration of fluoride in the body. Fluoride is associated with depressed pineal melatonin synthesis by prepubertal gerbils and an accelerated onset of sexual maturation in female gerbils. The result strengthens the hypothesis that the pineal has a role in the timing of the onset of puberty. Whether or not fluoride interferes with the pineal function in humans requires further investigation. In a more recent study titled Fluoride Deposition in the Aged Human Pineal Gland, the study concludes this way. In conclusion, this study presented evidence that the fluoride readily accumulates in the aged pineal. Fluoride may also accumulate in the child's pineal because significant amounts of calcification have been demonstrated in the pineals from young children. In fact, calcification of the developing enamel organs and the pineal gland occur concurrently. If fluoride does accumulate in the child's pineal, the pineolocytes will be exposed to a relatively high local concentration of fluoride. Fluoride has been associated with many other health problems, including allergies, arthritis, bone disease, cancer, dental fluorosis, gastrointestinal issues, immune system problems, kidney problems, respiratory and reproductive problems, thyroid gland issues, and tooth decay. To learn more about it, go to fluoridealert.org or fluorideaction.com. There are a number of ways to reduce or even eliminate fluoride from your water supplies. The first would be activism, Write a letter to your congressman, or to your mayor, or to your government, or to your local municipal water supplier, and tell them that you oppose water fluoridation. Unfortunately, there are only a few methods for filtering out fluoride from our water supplies. One is reverse osmosis filtration systems for our homes. Another is similar, installing a home distilling process for our home water supplies. The method that I prefer is the gravity-based Berkey-type water filters. Number one, because it's the cheapest option, both initially and over time, as the filters can last a year or more, and they can be cleaned. It's portable, too, which means to me it's more versatile, and it's the only one that doesn't rely on your home water system working, which is important because historically, in the event of a disaster, the water supplies are usually the first system to go.
Welcome back to Your Battle to Win. This episode, we're talking about assembling your allies. And Dad is trying to call. Sorry, Dad. We can't talk right now.
You'll have to text him.
All right. But so this round, we're going to be talking about needing differences. Why are differences important in terms of choosing your allies?
I'm going to go off that commercial we just ran a little.
Okay.
It's kind of funny. Jared was like, oh, my. And I was like, hey, this is pretty cool. So, but I think we need differences because the battles that we're in come in a lot of different forms, and we might not even realize that fluoride is a part of our battle. Let's say if we're having, you know, some – like emotional kind of responses or inability to remember or different things that fluoride does, just kind of saying. We need differences. We need allies that see things differently to help us so that we can address the problems maybe from different standpoints.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of what we went over a few episodes ago on stress and having to win that battle so that we can approach whatever that the people or the situation better, because we're just addressing the stress. We need to be looking at our own personal battles from a lot of different standpoints, and we need people who think differently. Even if we totally disagree, I think we need the humility to keep thinking about it or considering it or doing more research or even including other allies in the perspective.
Yeah. Just because somebody does something differently doesn't necessarily mean that it's wrong. I've been learning that sometimes the most important opinions will be the ones that are different. Not in the sense of difference in terms of like morals and stuff, but more or less the way that they go about accomplishing something. So let's say, for example, two people come together to build a house, right? And two of them have very different styles of building. Let's say one likes to build with wood and another likes to build with bricks. Just at the very basic fundamentals of what you use or what materials you use, and not even talking about the differences of, you know, styles, even the environment, what the foundation's made of, just strictly what the house looks like and what its primary resources. Just because one prefers wood over bricks doesn't not necessarily mean that he's wrong. He just does it differently but accomplishes the same task. The same thing with the brick guy. So
not if you read the three little.
Okay, we're not talking three little pigs. We're talking about just strictly just the concept of
that. Yeah.
But if they properly can see where each piece has its strength or each resource has its strength, they could actually come together and build something that's more unique than if it was just one or the other.
Right.
And so instead of having friction, even if you have somebody that does something different from you, you can learn a lot. And who knows, you might want to incorporate that into what you do or you change your view entirely. As if it's obviously within the same, like, ultimate, what are you trying to achieve with your life?
Right.
You know, because there have been times where I've been, like, I've done something on social media. And someone was like, well, why don't you, like, this is how I do the same, like, this is how I accomplish the same thing, but this is a different method. This is how the results are a little different. I mean, like, we can go as simple as a post on Instagram. Some people will edit their photos within the app, of Instagram, some people will use other apps to edit the photos first. Some people won't even bother using an app and will just modify the color correction within their camera roll. Or there's some people that even go as far as to edit their stuff in Photoshop before they email it to themselves and then upload it to Instagram.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many meticulous ways to get a post on it, to edit a photo before it gets posted on Instagram, that there is no right or wrong way to do it. Some will look better than others, and sometimes there will be people that will go super elaborate into Photoshop and get really technical on the color correction, and there will be somebody that just loads, that will just use their camera roll color correction to edit a picture. And sometimes the guy that does it simpler does it better than the guy that has the professional software. Like, there's no right or wrong way to do it. It's all about the approach. And so people can, like, talk about, okay, this is what I do. This is what you do. Oh, cool. How do we incorporate that for what we already do separately and make it, like, better for ourselves and each other?
Right. And those
it's a very basic. It's a very basic analysis. The same thing can be applied to it.
Well, when we get into, like, some of the deeper things, deeper battles, like some very hard, difficult battles that we're trying to face, the idea that, you know, how were those differences, like in your examples, you know, really needs to be, I guess what I'm hearing is we really need to be open-minded that there are other solutions. People handle things differently and may be able to navigate themselves out of the situation that you're stuck in because you're not looking at enough options.
Yep.
Or you're so used to thinking only a certain way and not having the ability to see differently. And that's something I was really praying about today. I started realizing, how am I really going to change as I'm getting older and seeing, like, deficits in me? Like, how am I going to change those things, right? Even though I'm very aware of, like, people being different and you know, all these different things, it's like, okay, how do you win those battles? How do you win those battles if you can see that, you know, you can do this color correction this way or that way or the other? There's a learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
There's some changes.
Yeah.
So
I think
getting to know people that are different, how they do it differently,
mm-hmm.
right? Becoming friends with them or actually asking them. You know, that was actually today's talk. We were going to go with asking, and we're going to do this in a few weeks because I want to do a lot more research. I found some really neat things on the concept of asking, you know, really asking God. I mean, I want to even say that right now, and the idea of that he's our biggest ally. Asking, the difference is really important. You know, asking why do you think this that I should do it this way? Or why do you do it that way?
I think that's a very big, important thing right there is the concept of asking because, like there's just some, like, sometimes there's situations where an ally is not going to help. Like, this is just part of their personality. They don't go out of their way unless someone asks them to. And so sometimes we might be getting in our own way just because we don't want to ask somebody, whether because we fear that we'll be inconveniencing them or that they don't want to help us or that they're too different to actually contribute to us or they believe something different so they don't want to associate with us. And the list goes on and on. But sometimes just asking out of curiosity will do more for you than even if you were to just be like, oh, I'm just going to ask for a literal opinion. To actually apply to my life. Sometimes just asking someone else's opinion about something that you don't even need to be asking about for your life, if that makes sense. For example, just asking somebody's difference in, let's say, food preference. Let's say you have a vegan friend, and I have vegan friends, and I'm not vegan. I'm carnivorous, or however this whole thing is.
I'm omnivorous.
But, you know, sometimes you can learn a lot just by talking to them about what they find value in that you may not, and you start to, you know, appreciate things a little bit more, even though you're not going to change and become a vegan, or at least for me, I don't plan on becoming vegan anytime soon. You know, I start to appreciate the way that they do things, even though it's completely different, and I don't want to do that in my personal life.
Right.
You know, there's a respect that happens, and you build an ally, even though you're eating on opposite sides.
Yes, and I'm going to give an example, too, because I just think it's important that we just keep seeing from other people's perspectives because we're so all so different. And it's really difficult.
It's crazy how we can all get along when we're all so different.
Or why we don't, and we could, right?
That's the more mind-baffling thing right there. Is like, how can people not find ways to get along?
I think because of that's part of the whole concept of I think the battle, the spiritual nature of the battle, that we create a lot of our own portion of the battle without realizing it because we exclude others' view, and so we can't see past our own view.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get ourselves stuck in whatever that battle or the emotion of it or the intellect of it or whatever it happens to be. So it was interesting because yesterday when I went swimming, this one lady came over after the swim and said, hey, you know, you really should wear a cap. You're going to ruin your hair. And then she said, you really should be wearing goggles. Because this lady in Arizona has been wearing contacts and she got an eye infection, got blinded. So she said, you know, it's really dirty in the pool and, you know, the chlorine's really bad and all the rest of it, right? And so I've been a swimmer for a while and I've been kicking, not swimming. So we moved, so I can't find my cap. I mean, I know I could find it if I really wanted to look for it. But, you know, I just feel like kicking right now. But I didn't listen to her. I mean, she thinks I didn't listen to her because today.
She saw you again.
I said, and she didn't want to look at me. Maybe she's like, oh my goodness, she's just so stupid that she's not listening to me. And
You should find your cap and goggles and then tap on her shoulder next time she'd be like,
but she spent some time with me talking, and I really felt like I was in a hurry, but I listened to her because I wanted to, you know, encourage her and also, you know, wanted to hear. She was wanting to be an ally, right? She was wanting to support me. So I was listening and kind of thinking, well, should I do this? You know, I do things to check my hair, and I don't really want to go into all that. That's not the point of this. Sorry, bless you. But my point is I did bring silver to put in my eyes afterwards because I thought, hey, you know what, I should just, you know, kind of keep them clean. I do other stuff to clean my body afterwards and to protect it and really internally too, you know, where I think maybe they're, you know, I'm not wearing contacts. There's reasons why I probably wanted to look the same problem as that lady. But she's right that, you know, I should be aware, especially of the need to have, you know, greater immune support when you're in the potential contact of contaminants, right? So my point is that she didn't think I was listening to her because I didn't do what she said. And so I know I offended her. And she probably dusted her feet and was like, this lady's lost.
She needs water, Jesus.
So, but my point is let's not do that with each other. She's an ally. But then now if she doesn't think that she's my ally or that I'm an ally or that we're, you know, that then we actually end up losing out on opportunities, you know, that are important to support each other. Because I listened to her. I heard her, you know, and we don't know who's really listening. I mean, anyways, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So the next point is actually keeping each other engaged. So obviously I have to figure out a way to keep her engaged. You know, if I have time and she has time, because I could tell she really cared. But on a deeper level, you know, when we have friends that we think that we get along with, how do we keep each other engaged as allies in the battle when we don't see things the same?
That's my weakness. I have no clue.
Yeah, and sometimes we get sideswiped. We don't even realize that we're going to produce an offense to somebody, and then
yeah, that's what I'm trying. I'm trying to figure out what I think. For me, I'm so into a routine with my circle, with like my circle of my life. Not my circle as in my friends, but just the way I operate. That my friends like are finding me like when they first meet me, I'm super interesting because I do everything different. And then they get to know me, and you're like, you're the most boring person ever.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they treat me that way. They're like, you're the most boring person ever because all you do is stay home, and work. You don't even have a car yet. Like, you don't even get to do anything. So we're just going to kind of leave you over here. And, like, whenever you need something for us, we'll be here. But we will, like, because it's tough. It's tough. So I'm, like, I'm trying to find out ways to be interesting when I don't even get to do anything.
So you're interesting at first.
Well, yeah, because I do. Like, I have done so much, like, you know, trips to L.A., travel a lot. My stories, my few stories from the travels that I do remember and that are highlights and stuff, like, those are interesting. And just the fact that I think differently is interesting. But usually once they figure out how I think and how, like, specifically interesting, if that makes sense. Like, my life has only been interesting in such a narrow lane that once they figure out that my life isn't very broad, it just kind of gets...
Well, I don't know if it's broad. It's just not specific to what their lifestyle is.
Yeah. I mean,
so there's not as much overlap.
And most people have a broader life, I feel, than I do. Like, I have a very... I mean, obviously, my life is a different type of broad, if you want to put it that way. But
I
feel like I don't do as much as the average person. And then at the same time, I do too much.
So you do more, yeah. I mean,
because, like, I serve at two churches, but then again, the routine can kind of get. I mean, the thing is when you're serving at a church, like, it's very important, but you can very easily become a routine. And when people ask about how you did at church, it's very when you're good at being consistent, it can kind of be boring. If that makes sense, like, oh, how was church? Yeah, I did well. I did this, and it's like, well, you did that last week, and that's like that's where you serve. So it's kind of. Like,
but some people don't even care about that. I mean, I've noticed some people just they're good with the answer.
Well, it's good,
the same,
like,
old, same old.
It's good. It's
or
good.
I do the same things or whatever. But they're happy with that. So they're.
But that's weird because, like, in my case, it's not how it works. Like, for me, I have to find out some one thing I found that I did different during the week, and it's interesting to see how people, like, react to that. So it's almost as if, like, when you meet somebody, they want something that would interest them would be this versus another person would be something completely different. So it's like it'll hit you completely out of the blue because you'll run into somebody that you weren't expecting to run into, and they'll ask you how your week was, and, like, you know that what you did so far during that week is not going to interest them at all. So you tell them, and you hope you don't, like, hurt their expectation. But because it's kind of weird because if you say something and, like, people have a high expectation of you doing something interesting and you don't, it kind of, they're like, oh. Like, you're not as interesting as I thought you were. So, like, that's how my mind goes. Maybe it's not that way for other people. But, like, I don't know. There's something, I guess we're kind of getting sidetracked here, but for me, there's something that I like about the, being predictably unpredictable. I used to try to be that way. I'm trying not to now because, like, I can learn and can create character flaws and stuff, and I'm trying to fix that. But, like, I don't know. I'm becoming a type of person that wants to, like, be consistently changing things up just to keep things interesting. Mm-hmm. Not just for, like, for sake of conversation, because the new thing is just to tell somebody is stupid, but, like, for the sake of keeping myself fresh, too, because I feel like at times I can get, like, a little sticky and stale, and I'm just like, I want to do something.
I think it's your age group, maybe. That has to do with it. But they would be there for you. When you first started it out, that they found out that you're not quite as interesting as they thought you were, but they would be there for you if you needed something.
Yeah.
And so the key is.
Which is still really important because, like, at least there's something that you've built with them that they find worth helping you.
Well,
that's so depressing.
We'll have to put
it's
you
okay.
on the...
I cry myself to sleep sometimes. Aww. I'm kidding, I don't.
But, okay, so the idea, the concept of winning, this is your battle, but...
Whoa! True.
This is your battle. So the idea of keeping others engaged, right? So I hear that that's an objective, but maybe, you know, what I was thinking when I was realizing that importance, I think we do as a culture move on to other people. We don't necessarily stick with each other and keep each other engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm hearing, even though you didn't say it like that, these are friends that you know, you guys are engaged in specific things that you work on together. And even though you're not in each other's lives during the week, it's that commitment. So we find out, like with my friend I was saying, right, with when she found out she had cancer, she had been with these people for years. They were in opposition. But when it came to her needs, they were there as allies, more than other people, she said. She said that it just totally, like, blew her away. And so the idea is that...
So sometimes it's the good friction that brings you to closer together than disagree.
Well, it's hard because there's some ideology, big ideology, right, that were in conflict. I mean, things that were completely, you know, ideologically different, right? So, I mean, I guess I can say, you know, within the Republican Party, right, she and someone else, I mean, you know, as almost as opposition, as you would say, even Republican-Democrat, right, that's the kind of thing. So that's the thing. We have many friends that are, you know, different backgrounds or different religions or different whatever. But the idea that as long as we're committed to each other, we don't even realize that really the core part is in our heart, that we really want to help each other win. We just get lost. We lose our focus. We're distracted by this other battle. There's other battles that are conflicting that maybe we're not looking at accurately either. And we need that humility to look at. And so, you know, I guess that frustration is that, you know, we're right, they're wrong. We always feel like that. We don't want to go around living thinking we're wrong, right? We want to, obviously, if we're going to form an opinion, we're going to form it about what we think is right. However, you know, I think we'll get farther in winning our battles when we are humble enough to listen to other people and really, you know, formulate how we're going to get through these battles and help each other win. So I guess that brings us to another commercial break, and we'll come back for the conclusion on really how we're going to win this thing together.
This is indeed a disturbing universe.
Yes, all I'm offering is the truth. On Unraveling the Matrix with me, your host, Austin Thomas. Yeah, we like to mess with the taboo stuff that you're not going to hear or see on the lamestream media. Now that you're awake, be aware. Be aware what's in play. CIA Mossad banking, money laundering, and international organized crime joint venture. Imagine that.
Don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed.
Well, we know how these elections are all on the straight and narrow worldwide.
Unraveling the Matrix with Austin Thomas. Saturday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on Truth Emergence Radio Network.
I'm hoping that they're listening to us here on Truth Emergence Network.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now, in this very room.
You can see it when you look out your window or when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes.
Colonists and were governed by the British King and Parliament, they devised ingenious means to tax us. One of the most hateful was the Stamp Act. It required that every person in the colonies buy a stamp that bore the image of the king and affix that stamp to every piece of paper in his possession. Question: how did the king know if every colonist was complying with the Stamp Act? Answer: the Townshend Act. This abominable law authorized British soldiers to write their own search warrants. Thus, British soldiers knocked on the doors of the colonists' homes and handed them warrants in which they had authorized themselves to enter, ostensibly to look for the stamps. They entered wherever they wanted, and they took whatever they wished. The colonists were so outraged at these self-written search warrants that Parliament actually rescinded the laws that permitted them. But the offenses to personal dignity and the assaults on private property were too deep. We fought a bloody revolution against the government that did this to us. After we won that revolution, we wrote a constitution to assure that these abuses would not happen again. And to that constitution, we added a Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights guaranteed that the government could not on its own assault your natural rights. Among them, that quintessentially American right, the right to be left alone. Today we call this right the right to privacy. The Fourth Amendment requires that the government, before the government can assault your right to privacy and search your possessions, come onto your property, listen to your phone calls, read your mail, monitor your keystrokes on your computer, or even obtain records about you from other sources like doctors, banks, or lawyers. It must present evidence of criminal behavior on your part under oath to a judge. And only if the judge accepts that evidence, and only if the judge issues a search warrant, may the government legally seek and seize whatever is specifically described in the warrant. No more government knocking on doors in the middle of the night and taking whatever it wished. Regrettably, the federal government has labored mightily to get around all this. Even though every person who works for the government has taken an oath to uphold the Constitution, many of them seem to spend more time avoiding and evading it. In the days after 9/11, Congress enacted the Patriot Act, an abominable piece of legislation which permits federal agents to write their own search warrants. With the Patriot Act, we have come full circle from the days in which a king unleashed soldiers upon us on their own to the present day in which our elected representatives have unleashed federal agents upon us on their own, all in utter disregard for our natural right to be left alone and the constitutional requirements of a judicially issued search warrant. The Patriot Act, perpetrated by a Republican president and Congress, was and is one of the gravest legislative assaults on human freedom. It was harshly criticized at the time by a young Democratic senator from Illinois named Barack Obama. But freedom must look very different from inside the White House than from outside. This morning we learned from the front page of the Wall Street Journal that the Obama Justice Department, without obtaining search warrants, has been using a computer program called Stingray, which manipulates your cell phone to enable the government to follow you whenever the phone is with you. And last month, the Obama Justice Department told the Supreme Court that it has been installing GPS systems on the cars of those without cell phones so it can follow them. And last spring, the Obama Justice Department persuaded the court to let cops break down doors without a search warrant on the basis of what they think they smell from coming behind the doors. And somehow it claims that the Fourth Amendment is no obstacle to all this. What's going on here? Is this really America in 2011, or is it East Germany in 1961? Would the government prefer to watch all of us, to seize our computer records, to listen to our conversations, to break down our doors whenever it wished, without following the Constitution? Yes, it would. Power by nature expands. That's why we have a Constitution, to restrain governmental power. Who would want to live in a society where the government was unrestrained? Have we fought wars against totalitarian governments only to find that we have elected one here at home? Did you even know that the federal government may be using your cell phone to follow you wherever you go? Have we become a nation of sheep? Sadly, the answers to these questions are obvious.
All right. Well, what we hear from what Judge Napolitano said is we definitely have a battle to win.
Absolutely. We're back. This episode, we've been talking about assembling your allies, defining them, why we need them, and finding common ground on why differences are important, and we're concluding our show with how we win as allies.
Well, I really...
Or your mom has... Mom actually has something better.
No. Definitely how we win as allies. Just hearing Judge speak, it's just so obvious that, or it seems so obvious that we need to be allies. We need to know how to work together. We need to help each other win these battles that we're in right now because we have bigger fish to fry. You know, we have other battles that are so important that we win together, and we have to be together. There's a need that we have to really be committed to each other, savvy to the battle, savvy to the victory, the means to get to be victorious. So, there are different ways that we've gone through on how to do our own declared wins and how to overcome trauma and things on our own. Definitely with the Lord, definitely through faith in principles that are so critical on our own to be able to master with the Creator. I mean, this is the battle. The battles that are there are really underlying our need to know and apply truth, to really know and apply what the Creator wants for us to win. I mean, there's a decisive victory that He wants for us to have over every little thing that we go through by spiritual tools, character, and those types of strengths. Now, we get bogged down, and even though we might know what we need to do, or we may be praying for ourselves, sometimes we're just not able to really shake it. So we really have to get to the place where we can count on our allies and that we've really worked together and developed those types of relationships. So, Jared had some things that he wanted to say that are really key to our being there for each other and winning the battle.
Yeah, the verse that came to mind was more or less the verse that talked about interceding for each other, which basically means to do something on the behalf of someone else, specifically prayer. And then I think in the context of the scripture, it talks more about the redemption of souls. But I think that's what the spiritual battles are about, our souls in the first place. So even somebody who is someone in the faith, it's important that we intercede even on their behalf and pray for them and fight alongside them, because there are going to be points where that person's not going to be able to be completely strong on their own two feet. And sometimes they may not even be able to see something that's coming right at them. But if you see something, you know, there's, like we were talking about earlier with the wrestling, you know, the coach will sometimes just be talking to the wrestler, hey, this is what you're not seeing, you know, try this move, do this move, do this move. But sometimes, like, let's take it out of the wrestling context. You know, let's say that you are in a war, like a literal war, like back in ancient Greece or, during the Roman Empire or whatever, and you got dudes with their shields and their armors designed to protect them from the front side, and, you know, you're surrounded by enemies and you got to have each other's back, and let's say you see the spear flying and your guy's not going to see it, you got to throw your shield up there or he's going to go down, and if he goes down, you are more likely to go down too. So you've got to have, you know, that's how I see interceding for somebody, like taking the effort to cover them, because you not only see the value of it for them, but even in your health as well. It's better for you to practice interceding for people, even in small things, because one, it helps build the relationship. Even if they don't see it, if you have the right motive for doing it, even if somebody doesn't see or understand the magnitude of what you're doing, it shouldn't matter. And that's what I've learned, is if you're truly doing it with the right intentions, it doesn't matter whether you get recognition for interceding for someone.
Right.
In fact, sometimes it's even better not even to worry about getting credit, even if it's strictly just the acknowledgement from that other person that you did that, sometimes it doesn't matter. Sometimes it's better that it goes without being said.
Right, well, but it's edifying to know that people are praying
yeah.
for you. And
no, I'm saying if I'm praying for somebody else, like they don't need to, like unless they,
no, I heard
yeah,
understood what
that's
you
what
meant.
I mean.
I think they understood what you meant too. Part of the thing is like sometimes we think of prayer as being a last resort. Yeah, a last resort. We all, you know, better try all these different things first. I mean, I guess even when I was saying when I text people, it's, you know, after I'm praying, after I'm, you know, speaking to you guys or however it is, you know, approaching it, then it's like, oh, this isn't working. I need to, you know, call on my prayer allies to help me out. And then every single time I see the Lord change the situation, which I still get amazed, which I, you know, I know I shouldn't. I should be just like, yes, I knew, right? Not because it's a boast in the Lord. That's the boasting that is the good boasting.
Yeah.
So, but then, so how do we get from that mindset of trying other things before we actually have allies praying with us? And do we feel like we're burdening other people to have them pray, or that we're not strong enough to pray it ourselves? How do we get to a place where we really see us going into battle together on things?
I feel like what it could be is what you end up doing is, like, I think it's kind of weird because, like, in order for me, the relationships that I've built with people in order to be able to have them pray for me in the spiritual realm, it started off with, like, a, you know, initially physical, like, it's not, I don't mean it in that way when I say physical, but more or less, like, the way that you perceive each other is like, oh, yeah, hey, it's nice to meet you, and we get along naturally without having any, like, deep conversations, you know, and then as the relationship builds and grows deeper, you're able to understand, okay, you know, I can trust this person with this, with these areas of my life that I'm going through, so I can, you know, the ground has been laid out that the seeds can be planted of, like, okay, this is, you know, we're going to invest in each other this type of way. That's how it's happened for me, and I don't have much experience with it happening any other way. It just really starts with finding something that's common ground enough to click, you build, and you get deeper, and, yeah.
You know, I think, well, we're also different on how we see or perceive our communication with God, right? Our prayers, our interceding, you know, those all take a different form. I think that's why it's even more powerful when, like you were saying earlier, you know, we have other people, you know, covering us that are different in prayer, mm-hmm. because they come before the Father in a different way, able to see things that they may not tell us, right? They see things that we need or that needs to happen. And I just find it, again, I find it so amazing. I find it very amazing how the Lord answers. And maybe because it takes, you know, when other people are praying, maybe because it takes our humility to ask.
Yeah.
You know, it takes vulnerability or humility to say, hey, you know, team with me on this.
Yeah. Very, like, I feel like the way that you meet your allies, you can't predict, but you can play a key role in how you create them. If that makes sense. You can't control how you meet them, but you can control how you create them.
What do you mean?
Because the way that we behave affects the way that people are going to respond to us. We cannot control who we're going to come in contact with, because, I mean, only God knows. Like, I've met a lot of people that I've never even knew existed, and they've become my closest friends. Like, yeah. No matter whoever is in your life, I mean, even our parents, we didn't even have we didn't choose them, you know, our best friends. We didn't necessarily choose that they would become our best friends. It's just something that happened naturally, usually. It's very rare when you'll be like, that person's gonna be the best friend, and that's how it works. Like, usually it's something that happened very naturally and very unpredictably. And I think that's something that's part of the beauty of the way God works. Because something that I'm always awestruck about, like, this is a side note, because as we grow up, and especially those of us that live in a better environment than, what is it, 90-something percent of the world is not even as well off as, they don't even get electricity and running water. Let's just put that in perspective. Like, out of all the odds and all the possible ways that I could have been, where I could have been born, I was, like, here. Like, to me, I spent so much time wrestling with that. I'm like, God, like, I literally could have been anybody else that we read about in the magazines that don't have it as well off as we do. Like, if we want to get statistical, there was like a 97% chance that I wouldn't be where I am right now. Yet, that's where I am. So I have to be like, okay, what is my reason for being like this? Because in my mind, I could have had any reason in the world to be born somewhere else.
But we have some unique battles to us as Americans, for instance,
yeah.
or North Americans.
I'm not saying we have it easy. I'm saying just like it's just, I mean, we have it easier in terms of living conditions. I mean, that's my emphasis. But, like, I don't know. That was just something, like, I'm talking about more or less in the lines.
I'm not sure. When I, okay, so.
You had me on purpose. Yay! I was not an accident. But, I mean, I didn't have that choice.
Well, the idea that spiritually, I believe, I mean, with how much stress that we go through as Americans and how much temptation there is to be ungodly in our culture, I mean, it's huge beyond what I think we even identify, I think, our ungodliness is.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that there's many things we do well, that because of where we live, and because of the fact that we don't have it, we have more, you know, we have more conveniences. There are things that we do to glorify the Father so much more, but too much is given, much is required. We are also under so much stress.
Mm-hmm. It's different.
And stress is in the four foods, but I mean, that is worldwide too, some of it. With the Monsanto, you know.
I just put somebody who doesn't have all the conveniences that we have. Like, let's say we just immediately switch roles with somebody. They probably still wouldn't be able to find out how to function here very easily.
I mean, there's a huge learning curve.
There's a huge learning curve in either situation. Like,
right.
Like, let's say, like, even in just social expectations.
So the concept of this is our battle to win, American battles, for instance, right, or North American, or even
wherever you are,
right? Well, wherever, in the 97% that doesn't have it as well off as we do, they still have their battle to win,
mm-hmm.
and they may feel that they've been given much, and they, you know, I've heard for my entire life just about that. You know, those in China and those in Russia at the time were praying for us because they could tell that our, you know, our fluff lifestyle or whatever made us weak, right? Made us, and are we? We really have to ask, or how weak are we? Kind of like with Judge Napolitano, look at all that we have and we're not strong enough to stand up to what we see as being wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we are. I think we're growing into the role, but not to the place where people can easily stop it
mm-hmm.
in their workplace, everywhere that they are. This is our battle to win. This mm-hmm. is really the crux of why we go through so much different trauma-type stresses.
And when it comes to our nation, the only way that we're going to be able to win these battles is not by creating enemies, it's by creating allies. I mean, as cliche as everybody's like, we need unity in our country, like, at the root of it, that is that because we have been, I believe, socially engineered and taught to have division subconsciously. You know, we naturally get divided in, you know, by our age categories, our grades, and even our grade that we get in our grades in our classes. That's a weird concept right there. You know, by class, by culture, ethnic backgrounds. They find all these different ways to divide us subconsciously. You know, how much income, the money your parents make, how much money you make, what your car is. Like, there's so many ways that they find out that
hair color.
Hair. I mean, no, that does play a role.
Oh, it does.
Which is, it's terrible how, like, everything is so superficial, but that's how the way we've been socially engineered to operate. And what it does is it creates division based upon materialistic things.
Well, wait. No, you're fine. But I want to bring some.
I'm about to.
Okay.
I was about to flip it.
Then you go ahead. Flip it.
It is not natural. I believe it is not. It is not natural to want division. Like, people were created for community. You will literally go insane and not be able to function if you are completely isolated. So. I think that's the way groups are too. If a group is too isolated from another kind of people or another group, that group will stagnate and that will fall as well. So I'm talking, and so in the sense that we become so ingrained in our mind that it's us versus somebody else, like this competitive mindset. I mean, as a creative, I know that a competitive mindset is what will shut you down. It will prevent you from being creative, rather than, you know, how do you create something more unique with another person? So to tie that into what we're going on, what we're seeing in our country, we need to see the benefit of, even though somebody may not completely agree with us, that if we find out ways to work together with them, even if let's say even if we find somebody who completely disagrees with us on an issue. If you can find a way that you can find a harmony or a happy space between those two, that's more important than trying to prove your side is like, or to get your agenda met or their agenda met.
See, that's a very deep, to me, a very deep spiritual principle.
I mean,
if we look beyond what we think a victory is going to be being right or wrong,
mm-hmm.
but a victory really is our ability to love one another, to really edify one another, to get at the core of value, that the other person has value, even if we think they're, you know, whatever, the negative words are brain dead or whatever, that even if we feel like that, it's the real victory is identifying them as really being not brain dead. They're just maybe deceived, or we are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can't even fathom how.
It takes a lot of humility to be able to have both those, or all those options of the possibilities of the situation on the same plate.
And it's. I mean, even though we're talking about it, it is difficult to grasp.
Oh yeah.
That concept that the spiritual things that we do hold more power than the actual things that we think will bring the solution. Because they will, but maybe they are important, but they're not as important as, you know, one of the things that I'm going to kind of maybe deviate a little bit on this, and I think from the types of people that listen to Blog Talk Radio, I think that they're going to resonate more with what I'm saying than the people that might find this a criticism. But I know one of the big things is, you know, obviously, to pray for the country, right? Pray for the people. Pray the Lord that you would, you know, that you would change us and intervene. In the same, all the rest of it that I identify as correct, they go into pray for the right person to be president, to deliver us from all this, to make it all right. And the thing is that that team are erroneous, you know, that they could be so correct spiritually, again, my opinion, right, so correct spiritually to agree with God on all these different things that we need to become and all the character things, and then miss the idea that our character be strong enough in order to make it so that it doesn't rely on one man or one woman who runs the whole country. It's because that's not what we're supposed to have here, right?
No.
That kind of tyranny or that kind of
Let's be honest here, too. The founding fathers themselves even said when they were about to sign the Constitution, a lot of them completely disagreed with the matters on the document. A lot of them, but I mean, let's be honest here, I'm sure it was not a complete unison. I completely agree with everything written here. But what they understood was that in order to have the harmony that they want, to see the type of world exist that they wanted to have, it was more important that these halfway points, I guess, where they wouldn't fully get their way, or I'm sure some people even didn't get their way at all, but they understood, they were willing and they were humble enough to step out of their chair and look at it from another person's perspective, and not just theirs, but to their colleagues, to their people back home, to somebody else in another colony, and see, like, okay, how would this affect them instead of just me and my people? And they all decided that what they had created was the best for the country rather than the best for them as individuals.
Right, or to have faith that we will build upon it or make changes.
Mm-hmm.
Then the flip side, I mean, some people feel like the imperfections were done on purpose, you know, to leave gaps for all the problems that we have today. I mean, those are other views to it too. But the concluding point in terms of being able to win it now, because we have what we have, and there were holes in it, there were gaps that we were supposed to correct. I think no matter what, you know, wisdom would have allowed us to correct it, wisdom and courage and fortitude throughout these years. Or, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, it's a battle. But, you know, Rome fell and, you know, countries have redefined boundaries, new, you know, more than we can even count. I mean, you know, at least in this evening, I think things have changed, right?
Yeah.
So things can change dramatically here, and we have a battle to win, and the Lord definitely wants us to win the battle, and he wants us to put into practice everything that's possible, you know, with him, in, you know, whatever we're willing to submit to him and yield to him, to have us change and be transformed, to actually apply truth, to be humble, to be wise, to seek and search for him and really know what his will is, because he wants us to win. He doesn't want us to be depressed, and he doesn't want us to go into chaos, and he doesn't want us to lose our homes or lose our lives. I mean, I think he wants us to be willing to lay down our lives. But he doesn't want us to lose it to pesticides or fluoride or, you know, making foolish decisions, running red lights or, you know, those types of things. He wants us to win these different battles.
Mm-hmm.
And he's there completely for us. And he's looking for us as a whole culture to make those changes. You know, definitely not looking towards, you know, for one person to be elected to be the savior, because, you know, he already sent the savior, and we already delivered, and we've already overcome the world. He's overcome the world, so definitely we've already been given the power to be more than conquerors in Christ Jesus. So, you know, so the idea that there's a wholeness to this, right? This that we have allies. The biggest ally is our Creator Himself,
mm-hmm.
and then you know, the angelic realm, they're our allies. You know, that's for another show. And then we have all of us, you know, other people around us that are our allies too. And then we are all really needing to see that it's a battle between good and evil. You know, those cartoons that we watched when we were little. And then, you know, just the Sunday school lesson. I mean, it really boils down to we can only overcome the evil with good. We cannot continue with fighting corruption with corruption.
Yeah. So what it does is creates more corruption.
Right. So we have to expose those things. We have to identify what's evil and be able to expose them, and to be humble, to beseech the Lord to give us eyes to see and to know what the solutions are. He says ask, so we will be going through those. I don't know if it will be next week. I want to do some big research on it. Because I found some pretty cool things from different perspectives. So do you have things to add on in terms of, let's conclude this on the strength of our ability to win our own personal battles with allies,
mm-hmm.
and then other people's battles, you know, our allies' battles, and then obviously people we don't even know as we intercede for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I would just say, just to me, my biggest struggle has more or less been, I guess making allies I'm good at doing, but I guess it's the maintaining them. So something that I'm telling myself is, like, be well-rounded so that way you have more area to cover that makes you a better ally for someone else. It's more important to be a good ally for someone else, because when you set a good example, that's the type of people you're going to attract. So if you're going to be a good ally, you're going to attract good allies. And good allies are always helping each other fight for each other better. And that's the more allies you have and the stronger your team is, the better off in the war you're going to be. And the more you will get accomplished, the more you will overcome. So that's what I would emphasize.
And so a lot of that is the long-term commitment that we have to another person.
Yes.
Because people have to get to know us, and we have to know them, and we need to know even how to not, and then, you know, how to support each other. Because it's that long term, you know, being there, knowing people for a long time, even if we don't agree, that there's a trust level that, you know, that the person is a person.
Mm-hmm. Person to person, you might have small.
Yeah, so, yeah, concluding thoughts?
That was my concluding thought.
All right, well, let's have a little time if anyone wants to call in and give their view. And
yeah, the number is 347-855-8301. That is 347-855-8301. If you want to call and chat it up with us and put your thoughts in, speak now or forever hold your peace. No, that's not true. We'll be back. But yeah, the number is 347-855-8301, 347-855-8301. But yeah, we broadcast every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. Arizona time. We have our own time zone, so aren't we cool? No, but right now we're
Pacific.
It's about to change.
Next
so we have a Facebook page called Your Battle to Win. So just search us up, and then there will be a purple icon that you can click on and like our page there, and we'll post the link every single time we broadcast live. So yeah, keep in touch with us there and join the conversation. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. This is Your Battle to Win. This week we talked about assembling your allies. And can't wait to be back here next week. We'll see you guys soon.